Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Health Resources and Services Administration within the Department of Health and Human Services, Chief Information Officer. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason.
So it's been almost 4 years since I had the CIO of HRSA, as you guys are maybe more commonly known, on my program. So there's a lot of previous priorities I want to start with. I talked to your predecessor 4 years ago, so maybe some of these you're inherited. But one big one was HRSA was actually preparing to renovate its building. I imagine, or I'm hoping that's done by now. And I'm sure that had a lot of new impacts on IT, IT support, IT capabilities. So let's just start there with the renovation. Is it done? And what's it? What did that mean to you as the CIO?
HRSA is part of Health and Human Services, and our mission is to improve access to healthcare by strengthening the healthcare workforce, by building healthy communities, and achieving health equity. We have some wonderful programs that I'm sure many people have heard of, such as our Health Center program, Ryan White, organ transplantation. We have some maternal and child health programs, as well as health workforce programs, such as loans and scholarships. So HRSA is comprised of about 1,800 employees, and we're primarily located in Rockville, Maryland, but we do have 10 regional offices throughout the U.S. So as you mentioned, we are at the tail end of the renovation of our building, which is located in Rockville, Maryland, and we have been moving people in phases to the newly renovated portion of the building as it became available. So as parts have been renovated, we've moved people from the old part of the building to the new part. So what we've done is we've implemented many new technologies in the building to support our mission, because I'm a firm believer that the mission should drive IT as opposed to the other way around. So what we've done is we've upgraded our network infrastructure so that it's 10 times faster to the desktop, and we upgraded our network backbone as well. In the past, we had wireless in pockets of the building. However, in our newly renovated building, we have an open floor plan, so we deploy wireless throughout the entire building, which has transformed, actually, the way that people work. So people are able to collaborate in open space areas, conference rooms, cubicles, and even remotely. And as part of this renovation, we consolidated our data center into a shared department-level data center to support OMB's initiative for data center consolidation. So my organization is responsible for heading the IT moves, and we've collaborated closely with HRSA's facilities group to ensure that the moves are seamless for our customers. So what would happen is that on a Friday, staff will leave, and then on Monday when they return, they come to the newly renovated space, and then their workspaces are already outfitted in terms of IT. They just need to dock into their laptop. So that's what we've been doing for the moves.
Very cool, and there's a lot that comes along with a renovation that makes things a lot easier. Let's just start with the kind of the simple stuff, the network backbone, the faster to the desktop. Is that all based on that data center move? Once you were able to move to the new data center, that enabled the upgrades?
Actually, it was the whole renovation of the building. The entire building was gutted. So we implemented new wireless, and that provided an opportunity for us to upgrade our backbone infrastructure. And now we have an open floor plan. But prior to that, we had a lot of individual offices, and therefore it wasn't very conducive for deploying wireless throughout the building. But we now have an open area, so it made it a lot easier to deploy wireless.
Now with the wireless deployment, is this something that you've also outfitted people with laptops or tablets or some kind of device where obviously they can move around, because as we know, with the desktop, you're not moving around.
Right. So we do not have those standalone desktops anymore. All of our users have laptops. And what we've done is that we deploy laptops that weigh 2.7 pounds. So we really do truly have a mobile workforce so that folks can carry their laptops on the metros, traveling, when they're moving around the building. So it really makes it easy, and it really supports a mobile workforce.
Is this something you're also going down the path of tablets, or you're not quite there yet? Because I'm sure that the deployment of laptops is maybe relatively new.
We deployed the lightweight laptops, but we also have some tablets that we're in the process of doing a pilot. So we do have 50 tablets that we're piloting.
And are they all different kinds? Are you looking at iPad over Windows over another type?
We're primarily looking at Windows, and that's because people seem to want to also not just access email, but to access their documents. And then from a security perspective with the PIV capabilities with the Windows tablets, we're looking more towards that as opposed to the iPad.
All right, very nice. I know we'll talk about mobility later in the show, so I don't want to steal all that thunder. One other thing I just want to touch upon, you talked about moving the consolidated data center into a shared data center within the department. Talk a little bit about that move. That's obviously a big initiative, as you mentioned, from the administration, the White House. How did that work, and what kind of benefits or what kind of new capabilities are you seeing from that shared data center?
Prior to the moves, we have 5 HHS operating divisions that are moving or that have moved within this one particular location. So instead of all 4 of the different operating divisions having separate data centers, what we've done is to have one data center here so that we share the space. So we share the space, facilities, the security around the data center, and then we have separate racks per optive.
Is there a cost savings that you're already seeing, or is it too early in the process that maybe will come in the out years?
It's a bit early in the process, especially because with the build out of the new data center, of course, we need to make sure that it was more robust than some of the, I'd call them older server rooms. So it's a little early in the game, but definitely from an operations and management perspective, we do see some synergies across the different operating divisions.
And I think sometimes, you know, people get caught up in the, are you going to save money or not? But sometimes just having those synergies, having those new capabilities, the modern equipment, that in and of itself is worth the same amount of money. You're just getting more for the money. That's probably something else you are considering as well.
Exactly.
Let's move on to another older priority. This is related, I think, because at the time you were doing the laptop refresh, your HRSA was, and you're also implementing a VPN, a virtual private network. What's the latest there, and are you guys using it, and what kind of benefits are you seeing with a VPN?
We did deploy a VPN a couple of years ago, and our customers are really happy with it, especially when it snows, of course. So our users, the way that we implemented the VPN is using the PIV cards to log in, which is meeting the HSPD 12 mandates for security for accessing government systems.
The VPN, is it something that is through a web browser? Is it like a PC on a stick? Can you talk a little bit more about how the VPN works?
We're using a Cisco VPN solution.
So it's something you log on to. I think we have something similar here. You kind of put your password and username, or in your case, probably your PIV card in, and that logs you on to that Cisco, and then you can reach back to the servers, the desktops. Can you give me a little more about how it works?
Right. So you just remotely log into the systems that are located at HRSA.
And people, as you said, are much more mobile with the laptops. Are you finding that they're using it to work from home, to work remotely? Is the VPN getting a lot of work, or is it just something there, again, when it's important to have, like when it snows?
VPN is used all the time because we have a lot of people at HRSA, they telework. And so VPN is used on a daily basis. And then also when you're traveling to meetings, or we do have 10 regional offices. And so when people are just trying to access resources remotely, they use the VPN services. So if they're traveling, they're using VPN. If they're teleworking, they're using VPN. If you're going out for site visits, you would be using VPN. And potentially even within the open office space, you're using VPN as well.
Right, because if they're logging in through Wi-Fi, obviously they're not connected to, there's no wire, right? So therefore, that's how they get through and to get to the data and information they need. That's
exactly
right.
Yeah.
The other piece of this is the idea of, if you have laptops, are you moving to thin client, zero client? Is there any kind of initiative around that as it relates back to, again, the VPN, the mobility, the Wi-Fi? I see a lot of times, a lot of CIOs, when you start talking about one, the other ideas come soon after.
No, but what we have been doing is we've implemented Link in the webcams to facilitate collaboration so that it's seamless whether you're in the office or if you're at headquarters or the regional offices or if you're traveling or teleworking. So we use Link, and NIH is our shared service provider for Link. We've migrated to a new cellular provider using the Fizzy Wireless contract so that we have more cellular coverage within the building as well as the Washington, Maryland, area, you know, the coverage area. So we implemented new smartphones, and we were able to reduce our cellular cost as well. We deployed voice over IP in the new space, so it's even so our workforce is even more mobile.
As far as when you talk about VoIP and new cellular service, do you guys have, because it's, you mentioned a couple times this open space plan, do you guys also have, for instance, hoteling? Is that a major part of it? So, you know, you come in, maybe not you, but maybe some of your staff comes in each day and sits wherever they have reserved a spot, or is, you guys are still at maybe assigned seating to a certain extent?
We do have some hoteling space as well. And then within the bureaus and offices throughout HRSA, they have space for people that are, you know, they may be teleworking more than others.
Do you have a percentage of how many people do telework for HRSA?
I think we have 50% of the people within HRSA telework. I'm not sure exactly the numbers per, like, how many days. I know for my staff, a lot of my staff, they telework typically one day a week.
All right. Well, very nice. And all these tools that you've now put in over the last 3 or 4 years make that so much easier. It's such a big difference, I imagine.
Yes, even with the voice over IP phones, because we have soft clients on the laptop. So when people are teleworking from home, it's pretty seamless if you're physically in an office or if you're working from home.
All right, very nice. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, there's a couple other older priorities that we want to touch upon, but we're going to take a break. My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Health Resources and Services Administration within the Department of Health and Human Services, Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Health Resources and Services Administration's Chief Information Officer. Now, Adrian, before break, we talked a lot about some of the new technologies you've implemented over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, upgraded desktop infrastructures, laptops, Wi-Fi, VPNs. All of this means that somebody's got to understand how to use it. It's not necessarily you walk in and turn your computer on and it goes. How are you dealing with the training aspect of all these new technologies?
Well, we have a traditional classroom training, but we also created a YouTube training channel so that staff can receive the training anytime and any place. For instance, we had training sessions or YouTube training clips on how to use the smartphones, how to use Link, how to use VPN, how to use the docking stations, and so that's been very well received.
And I imagine it's just a matter of giving people that initial kind of training, because, you know, a docking station is fairly straightforward, even if you haven't used one before. You know, logging onto the VPN, you just need to know certain pieces of the pie, but once you do it once or twice, you're good to go. Do you find that that's kind of a more efficient way to deliver the training versus bringing people together in a classroom?
I think it offers opportunities or different options for people because, for instance, if you're teleworking and you weren't able to physically sign up for the class, and I think also from a training perspective, it's cheaper to have the training videos as opposed to having to have a live instructor present all of the training materials. So we just find it provides a lot more flexibility for us.
How did you guys set up the YouTube channels? I mean, was this a company, for instance, that you contracted with, or is it something you did internally?
It's just something that we did internally.
So you're a YouTube star. We can find you on YouTube. We can link to it, right?
Oh, not so much me, but some of my staff.
All right. Well, I'm trying to help you out, you know, try to get discovered, right? Well, that's good. I mean, I think that training sometimes people forget about. They love the new technology, but if you don't know how to use it, then the technology is not as beneficial as you hope. So that's great that you guys are looking at different options. Let me move over to a third priority that was talked about a number of years ago, and this was the modernization of a grant performance system as well as the creation of a data warehouse. Both are related. What's the status of those initiatives, and what kind of benefits are you seeing?
We're seeing many benefits with our grants performance systems. We automated, for instance, our site visit processes. We audit some of our grant formulas. We've improved the overall performance for that system, and we updated our user interface for the grant performance systems. In terms of the data warehouse, we did successfully implement that system. So the data warehouse serves as an enterprise repository for HRSA's data and makes the data available to the public. So the data warehouse integrates this data from external sources, enabling users to gather relevant and meaningful information about healthcare programs and the populations that they serve. So the data warehouse is used by internally within HRSA. It's used externally by grantees, care providers, the public, and other audiences that are interested in HRSA information.
So this has been a big push for data, data everywhere. Are you guys putting some tools in that data warehouse? Are you putting the raw data sets out like on data.gov and letting people just go to town with it? Give me some of the ways that this data is being beneficial, not just to you guys, but as you said, to some of your stakeholders.
Well, some of the information is put on data.gov, and some of the information we have, we work with different organizations to potentially use our data as well.
And internally, are you adding some tools to it as well, some data analytics tools? Because one of the things that you hear a lot from CIOs is big data is everywhere, and everything is related back to big data, both from a decision-making perspective, but also from an understanding your business perspective. Are there some tools you're using?
We use GIS for the data warehouse, but we're implementing some business intelligence and data analytic tools across the enterprise. In fact, we're doing an assessment of our data warehouse as well to look for other opportunities and use cases to understand better what are some of the programmatic needs and how we can help.
When you talk about this effort around, you know, business intelligence and data analytics and doing an assessment, what's the time frame around that assessment, and what do you hope to come from? And is this a potential contract opportunity? Now, I'm putting it out there for all the vendor listeners, so I'll give you the warning now. Answer carefully, right?
So we already have a vendor that's on board right now that's performing this assessment. We just kicked off the assessment. It'll take about 6 months for us to complete the assessment, but there may be some opportunities later based on the recommendations from that assessment.
All right. Don't blame me when your phone starts ringing from all the vendors who want to tell you about those opportunities. But,
I'm sure, yes.
I can take responsibility for that. And it's interesting that you talk about using GIS. Now, part of the reason here is because it's healthcare data, not personal identifiable information per se, but healthcare data. It's very locational. It matters where it's coming from, what part of the country. Is that where the GIS fits in?
Well, it fits in terms of where we provide grants across the United States and what type of grants are within certain states. So that is how we use the GIS. We also have a tool called Find a Health Center where you can enter in your zip code, and then you can find the closest health center that is a HRSA grantee. So we use it for that as well.
All right, very nice. I think a lot of people probably don't realize that using something as simple as, you know, zip codes and other GIS data, that's the end result of making things easier for the public.
Well, keep in mind, you know, we provide access to healthcare for underserved communities, and how are they going to find it if they don't, you know, for instance, use a tool such as Find a Health Center?
And I think that's a great use of data, and it's easy, and so many people now have the smartphones. We take it for granted sometimes, but more and more people are using them, and that's an easy way to find it.
Well, just for that Find a Health Center tool, we've seen increase in usage of 20% now that we made the site responsive.
That's incredible, isn't it? I mean, that's just it's a good feeling in the sense that you can see the difference you guys are making. I imagine that that's very rewarding for you guys, both from an IT perspective, but from a mission perspective.
Yes.
You mentioned grantees, you know, obviously supporting the health centers. You talked about the grant system. There's a lot of tools that you added there. Where do you see that going? Do you see the continued evolution of your grant performance system?
In fact, we're looking at ways to reduce the burden to our grantees with some of the reporting that they have to do typically like on an annual basis. So we're looking at ways to automate some of these reporting requirements to our grantees.
And roughly, how much money do you guys put out in grants, and how many grantees do you have, just so we get a sense of who this impacts? Do you have a top line numbers?
So we have 1,300 grantees, 9,000 sites, and we give out about a little over $8 billion a year in grants.
All right, very nice. That's a lot of money. Let's move over to the cloud now. I know a lot of agencies are adopting the cloud, looking at the cloud. HRSA was actually an early adopter of cloud computing, specifically around external websites, maybe even applications to what we called then a hybrid cloud. Talk a little bit about what the status of that effort today. How are you guys using the cloud today versus maybe a couple years ago?
We are big users of the cloud. We use cloud for our web conferencing capabilities. We use cloud for our web collaboration tools. We use Connect for our objective reviews when we review grant applications. So we no longer like pay for travel costs. We do a lot of things remotely. We use Connect for our advisory committee meetings. We use them for webinars and events such as technical assistance to our grantees. We've even used Connect for virtual job fairs. Last year, we used over 150,000 hours of Connect services, which we saw an increase of about 20%. In addition to Connect, we use cloud for our voice over IP solution. We didn't stand up our own voice over IP solution. We use the WIS contract and we use Avaya. And so when we renovated the building, we migrated from legacy ISDN phones to voice over IP telephones as well as soft clients on the desktop. So all of that is in the cloud. The service is pretty much turnkey, and really folks have been really pleased with it. And in addition to using some commercial cloud providers, we use a government cloud for our SharePoint services, and we're currently evaluating the use of a commercial SharePoint provider as well. We're looking at going to SharePoint 2013. So we're always evaluating our applications to see if it's appropriate for us to use cloud or not.
I was never sure if voice over IP was ready for prime time, but you guys seem to have got it right. Has it worked well for you since you implemented it?
It's been working great. We're using a voice over IP phone now, and we don't hear like the jitter or that background noise or anything like that. I mean, it really has been pretty seamless. Now, what we did is we deployed handsets to all of our users, but we also deployed headsets as well, and we gave our users the option of, you know, types of headsets because that's more of a personal preference for the headsets. So anyway, it's worked out really well. Folks are really excited, and I've not heard any complaints. We provide training for our folks as they move on the new telephones, and people have been extremely happy with them.
All right, well, that's great. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more about cloud, and we can talk more specifically about shared services. My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Chief Information Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Chief Information Officer of the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, within the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, Adrian, before break, we got into the cloud conversation. You guys have moved a lot of things to the cloud. You saw a lot of success with moving things to the cloud, including the VoIP. Let's talk about other things. Email, you've moved and you were looking at a couple years ago, email and other shared services as part of the NIH initiative. Talk a little bit about that effort and how that relates back to your cloud initiative.
So we've used NIH's email services for over 10 years. We use them for Link as well as they provide TIC for all of HHS. So we use them for those services, and they also provide Tier 1 desktop support. So we use them for Tier 1 support as well as their ticketing system. So that's worked out really well over the years, a great partnership there. And we use other shared services across HHS. We use a shared financial system, shared HR systems, as well as procurement systems. So there's a lot of synergy across the HHS operating divisions within HHS to share ideas and or capabilities across the department whenever possible.
When you guys are sharing all these back office functions, what's that mean for governance? What's that mean for making decision-making? Where do you fit in from a HRSA perspective in terms of that decision-making effort?
Well, we do have governance that exists within HHS. We have an administrative and management domain governance group with senior leaders across HHS, including each of the operating divisions. We have different funds, different work groups specific to the money. You know, like you have one that focuses on the administrative system, another group that focuses on the funding for those systems. So we have a lot of governance around those systems.
And as CIO, imagine you're worried not just about the technology side, but also the funding side, because you got to have money to pay or you're paying into it to do those upgrades. Has HRSA kind of given up, if you will, not given up, maybe is not the best word there, but relinquished a lot of those back office functions? You feel like you don't have to worry about it anymore. It's off your plate in many ways?
Yeah, I mean, they seem to, I've been at HRSA for about, it'll be 2 years in January, but it seems to work well. And so we've been focusing more on program and mission related type of challenges. But for the HR systems, the financial management, procurement systems, like I said, the email works well with NIH. And whenever we can potentially outsource something, that's what we do.
I think it's a great model because so many times you talk to CIOs, and several CIOs I've talked to over the last couple, you know, about, you know, say 18 months have really said, I just want to get out of the commodity IT. I want to stop supporting this and really just put my efforts into mission. I think here's a great example of an organization, in your case, HHS or HRSA, that seems to have been doing that. It was in process before you got there, but you were able to keep it going. What's the biggest challenge that you face with this kind of model? Are there any different challenges than you would face if you owned the equipment, if you owned the technology?
What's key with shared services is making sure that you have, like you said, the governance around the shared services, that you have service level agreements in place, that it's indeed a partnership between the service provider and the service consumer. So I think that all of those are important for successful implementation of shared services.
And that partnership, I think, as you said, is key, because if you don't have that service level agreement, if you feel like you're not getting what you need, then you say, well, I can do it better myself. But if you're getting what you need, then you don't even entertain those thoughts. Of course, there's other people involved in that discussion about getting what you need, but you'll hear it from the mission people. I imagine the mission people don't even know where their HR is processed, where their financial management is processed.
For the most part, it's transparent. Because the way that I look at it, ultimately, I'm still responsible for providing IT services to HRSA. And so if I have service providers on the back end, all of that really should be transparent to my customers.
We've talked a lot about old priorities, cloud, VPN, upgrades to laptops. Let's look forward a little bit now and talk about new priorities. Adrian, what are you trying to get done? What's your goals over the next 6 or 9 months?
We've made significant progress on mobility here at HRSA with our VPN, wireless, and collaboration and video technologies. We've been implementing the responsive design for our applications. We talked a little bit earlier about the Find a Health Center. So we're moving more and more to enterprise solutions, and we established an IT roundtable to discuss pain points in the bureaus and offices within HRSA so that we can be more proactive as opposed to reactive for the business needs within the organizations. So what we're doing is we're looking at big data and data analytics. We're implementing business intelligence capabilities at an enterprise level. So we're in the process of doing a pilot of deploying Tableau because we want to maximize our data not only within HRSA, but we collaborate with other HHS operating divisions, other state and local government agencies, other federal agencies. So we want to make sure that we have the tools in order to better utilize our data as well as external data sources as well. So we're looking at more agile dashboards. In the past, what we would have to do is to have generate static reports. And so we want to be able to generate more agile dashboards so that the capability exists in the hands of the program as opposed to having to come to IT to generate a special ad hoc report. So we're doing all this to better support our programs. We're looking at ways to reduce our burden on our grantees when it comes to collecting data for reporting purposes. So we're looking at opportunities in that area. We're about to pilot a content management platform, and this solution will help us with records management, and it'll just help us overall in better organizing our data because the process is really manual now, and what we want to do is to automate it and make it easier so that people can find the information that they need. And then finally, for me, it's not just about the technology. It really is about the workforce. So recruiting is a big priority for me, especially in terms of IT recruiting, because there's such a shortage in IT talent in this area. So we're focusing in that. And I'm on the board of an organization called GITEC, Government Information Technology Executive Council, and we're developing an agenda. We have a 2.5-day summit in Baltimore, and we're going to focus a half day on the federal workforce, the next generation. And what we want to do is to collaborate with colleges and universities to develop potential opportunities for students and to really kind of promote government service.
So a lot there, the work with GITEC. I know you're very familiar with my colleague Tom Temin, who does a lot of work with GITEC. I think that's a fascinating effort and looking forward, because there's so many people retiring. Are you seeing that wave hit HRSA in your IT organization in terms of people retiring and having to bring in some of the if you will, younger folks?
We're seeing people are retiring. I think what's a challenge, especially with IT, is all the agencies are fighting for that same talent, especially at some of the higher grades. And I think we need to think beyond just looking for people that are already seasoned and experienced, what we need to do is to think about bringing in some young talent and really cultivating that talent and providing opportunities for, like I said, the next generation.
Have you found that from, you know, at least your perspective, you're able to do that? Or how are you able to kind of cultivate that next generation, just at least within HRSA?
Right now, having conversations with some of the local universities to try to potentially connect some of the students with some of the different government agencies. I think that the younger generation, I think it will be helpful for them to understand the missions of the different agencies and potential opportunities. And I was just talking to a counselor at one of the schools, and she said that we need to provide, I guess, the younger generation, that they really need to understand, like, how to network better. And so what we're trying to do is to set up, like I said, a half-day session where the students can potentially present on, for instance, their capstone projects, maybe do something where the kids can present on, like, a poster day. I know when I used to work at NIH for 12 years, and poster day was really big. But a way to engage some of the younger generation, and then also to provide that expertise of the older generation, and that hopefully we'll have, you know, there'll be a good fit with some of these students as well as some of the agencies.
I think that's so important. I think a lot of times people, you know, lose track of that, the reach out piece, you know, getting people interested in government service and why it's important. I think that's wonderful that you're looking at working with those, some of the other universities. Let me back up to another priority you talked about. You said you're deploying some business intelligence capabilities. Talk a little bit about that pilot program. What are you looking at, specific data sets? Are you just looking at a specific number of users? How is that pilot going to work?
Well, we're doing a pilot with our reporting systems right now. And what we're doing is we have, like I said, some static dashboards, and to better provide information about the different programs. For instance, if we wanted to have what-if scenarios, it would be really great to have a tool that's agile enough so that we can actually do some what-if scenarios, as opposed to right now, we're just limited in the capabilities, or it takes too long. And especially with the organization such as HRSA, sometimes we need to be responsive, and we need to have the ability to generate information a lot quicker.
And I think that's part of the key here, is why these capabilities are becoming so popular, is to really generate that capability quicker, so you know what's happening, to make those real-time decisions. In the end, I mean, is that what you're hoping to get to, is change the process and the speed of the decision-making?
Yes, and then really to be able to support the programs. And what we're doing right now is reaching out to the business to find out, you know, what are your pain points? How can we help you? We have a lot of data, but how can we, you know, and data cuts across different programs, across HRSA, data cuts across other operating divisions within HHS. How can we better utilize that data to help us make more informed decisions?
And in the end, that's what this is all about, right? That's why we all have IT. So I think that's an excellent use of, at least an excellent vision going forward. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk maybe a little bit more about cybersecurity, maybe even FITARA. But first, we'll take a break. My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Health Resources and Services Administrations within HHS Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Adrian Burton, the Chief Information Officer for the Health Resources and Services Administration within the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, Adrian, before break, we were talking a lot about your new priorities, and one of your new priorities that you mentioned was a new IT roundtable. Let me broaden the question, not just about the IT roundtable, but how does that effort really relate to a customer service or a customer focus effort that I'm seeing, I think, across a lot of CIO organizations?
So we started our HRSA roundtable probably about a year ago, and the roundtable is comprised of different types of people throughout the organization. There's some IT folks, a lot of program folks, and really what I want the roundtable to focus on are really on how can we solve some of the business problems across HRSA. Another thing that we've done is we've implemented dashboards to measure our performance on a weekly basis from a OIT perspective. And I try to make sure that I reach out to not just the VIPs within the organization, but everyone to get feedback on how we can improve some of the systems. We implemented robust change management processes to reduce disruptions to our users, especially during end-of-year closeout or our busy grant cycles. And we use ITIL processes to perform instant reviews so that we can learn from every opportunity, including unplanned outages. Another thing that we've done within HRSA is to increase communication is that our HRSA administrator, he holds a virtual HRSA all-hands meeting each month. And so we use webcast and we use video conferencing capabilities so that everyone can participate, including our staff from our regional offices.
So when you talk about the dashboard to see how your performance is, do your mission folks, your mission stakeholders, partners see that dashboard as well?
Yeah, our administrator sees that. In fact, the HRSA administrator developed a dashboard that we're implementing across HRSA to look at the various programs, not just programs, but operations.
And when we talk about operations, you mean like HR and finance, for instance?
Everything. All of the administrative operations across the organization, such as contracts. But he even added that as a separate strategic goal to the HRSA strategic plan is the operations within HRSA.
And that's where those big data pilots and the need for more big data probably comes in. To tag it back to an earlier part of the conversation, the fact is you have to understand what the data says and you have to be more agile. So when the data comes in, you can move more quickly against it.
Right.
Interesting. Now, are you finding that this customer-centric effort is working? Is it making a difference?
Yeah, I think that it works really well. I think that people feel as though they have a voice. Our HRSA administrator also has conversations with the administrator so the staff can meet with him. They can sign up for these meetings and bring up any concerns, issues, or feedback. And so it's just a great feedback loop.
Going back to the IT roundtable for a second, are you finding that the mission areas are better connected to the IT areas? Meaning when you guys come up, hey, we should really implement X technology, is it based on those conversations with the mission folks? Because many times, as you said very early on, you can't be about IT for IT's sake.
Right. That's just one form, the roundtable. We also have different stakeholder-type groups, other user groups to receive feedback about our services. For instance, we have a Connect user group because for the people who use Connect a lot, we want to know how is it working out? How can we actually improve the service?
Let's shift gears, talk a little bit about cybersecurity. That hasn't come up too much today, but I know every CIO is focused on it. Talk a little bit about how HRSA is really focusing on improving your cybersecurity.
So security is stressed at the highest levels at HHS. So at HHS as well as across HRSA. So that really helps as a CIO is to hear it coming from the top down. So our challenges at HRSA are similar to any other government agencies. We have some systems that are located within HRSA. Some systems are completely contracted out. But I think the key is better communication with the system owners, making sure that you have the necessary reporting and transparency and accountability to make sure that our systems are secure.
A lot of CIOs talk about risk management. Is that being incorporated into all these user groups and all these other efforts you've been talking about? So people understand when they want technology or they want to do something from a mission perspective, is that there's a risk trade-off that they have to understand?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing, I think, a better job at baking in security from the very beginning, especially in the planning process and the contracting process and the implementation of systems. So I think that we're doing a better job with that. I mean, there's always room for improvement, but I think that we are getting better in that process.
I think that's the key is to get better and get people used to talking about risk versus just, you know, there's the old joke, the CIO of no, right? CIO no. You can't say no all the time, but they have to understand why you say no based on a risk profile or a risk management perspective. We are almost out of time. Before I let you go, let me just catch up on two things. First, a little bit about your background. You said you've been CIO at HRSA for about 2 years and you worked at NIH previously. Talk a little bit about your background a little bit.
Right. So I've been in the federal government for 27 years. I worked at NIH for 12 years. I was in charge of their centralized data center as well as email, high performance computing, and hosting services. I also worked at Department of Justice for 6 years, and I started off my career as a COBOL programmer at IRS. CMS. And then I've had the fortune to rotate to OMB, CMS, as well as Indian Health as part of my SES candidate development program.
So you know a little COBOL. I heard there's a job for you at SSA if you're looking.
Yeah, and then I also serve on the board of GITEC for 8 years, and I have the opportunity and pleasure of collaborating with CIOs across government as well as across industry. So I'm really pleased with that, and we're holding our summit April the 10th through April 12th in Baltimore, and so we're in the midst of planning for that, and we're going to focus on workforce, cybersecurity, big data, and operations, and I'm really looking forward to that because it'll be a great opportunity to see what other agencies are doing.
Very nice. We'll make sure we link to that GITEC event webpage on our website as well to help you guys get the word out of that. Finally, vendors. As we talked a little bit about before, a lot of vendors do listen to the show. They're interested in what opportunities maybe you have. How do you like them to work with your office?
So we have a lot of business opportunities for both small businesses as well as big businesses. But I think what's key for vendors is they really need to tailor their message to the organization that they're talking to. I think that is more about their product as opposed to how they can add value to a particular agency. So I would just encourage vendors to make sure that they do the research on HRSA, that they really tailor how they can help improve our mission.
All right, very good advice, because I think that's the key, right? It all goes back to mission, not just technology for technology's sake. Sounds like we could talk longer, but unfortunately we're out of time for today. My guest today was Adrian Burton, the Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Adrian, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.